new chapter today. Esther chapter 2, grooming the deep state honeypot. And we're going to start this out by reading a verse from Titus chapter 1, verses 13 through 14. And it reads, "This witness is true, wherefore rebuke them sharply, that they may be of sound in the faith, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth." You know, previously we discussed how the very names of Esther and Mordecai are actually variations of the Babylonian gods Ishtar and Merodach. Ishtar being the Babylonian goddess of sex, lust, and war, while Merodach being the chief Babylonian god or the political god of Babylon. And what we're going to discover as we go through this book, chapter by chapter and verse by verse, is that this book covertly weaves the themes of these Babylonian gods, Esther and Mordecai, but disguises them as people of the tribe of Judah or as Jewish heroes. And, you know, when you look at it that way at the end of this book, you know, when you see all the evidence presented, out of all of the Jewish fables, this one takes the cake. This is the one that is like the one that you really don't want to be deceived by because it's the most influential one. Now, that isn't to say that we shouldn't study this book of Esther. We should, but we have to understand it in its proper context. And that proper context being a Jewish fable wherein is interwoven the worship of Babylonian gods and goddesses. So we got to be very careful. All right. Esther chapter 2 outline, the leaders. We're going to see in verses 1 through 4 that the leaders, or the king here, gets manipulated by lust. Verses 5 through 7 will be about Babylonian gods disguised as Jews, and we talked about that. Verses 8 through 14, we're going to see a 6-6 purification ritual that eerily reminds us of Epstein Island. In verses 15 through 18, we're going to see the Esther, Ishtar, and Venus connection, okay, or the morning star. And then to close out this chapter, we're going to see Mordecai operating as a puppet master in verses 19 through 23. Esther chapter 2, verse 1. After these things, well, what happened in chapter 1? We know that the king was drunk at a banquet. He wanted to show off his wife, Vashti, and she refused to degrade herself in front of these drunken men. The king was advised to replace her so that all the other women would be compliant to the will of the state, the will of their husbands. And so now they're going to look for a replacement for Queen Vashti, which we talked about was a type of the true church, the faithful church being deposed by the state, if you would, or removed by the state in favor of a more compliant system, i.e. Zionism. Esther chapter 2, verse 1, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her, and said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. Now, we must understand there's a deep state around the king. How do I know that? Well, this is a fictional story. Esther and Mordecai are the heroes, so obviously the king's servants. And we see this today, right? It's not something that is something that we don't see in reality today. Around the king, around Trump, around the presidents, we see the deep state network is always alive and running, okay? Giving the leader manipulating the leader to do their will. Okay. So the king's servants, or the deep state agents that ministered unto him, said, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. King, don't be sad about Vashti. Hey, let's just go find a bunch of young virgins and let's replace her. So what are they using here? Okay, they used flattery, drunkenness, and luxury. They used luxury and drunkenness. I don't know if we got to flattery quite yet. We might have, but we'll get to that. They used luxury and drunkenness and materialism in the first chapter. Now they're using, the deep state is using lust, sexual desire to control or manipulate the king to do their bidding. So the king, obviously, when you look at a bunch of dumb leaders today and we see them, they're going to fall for this, right? Verse 3, and let the king appoint officers in all provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins into Shushan the palace, to the house of women, unto the custody of Haggai, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. All right, just go out and gather all of the young virgins and bring them here. You know, that sounds, you know, some people would make the argument, well, isn't this kind of how things operated back in the day with harems and stuff like that? Well, I think this one's a little bit different. I think when we're looking at this, we're looking at women that were manipulated and probably forced to come to this setting. They didn't really have a choice. Imagine being at your home and you got daughters and you got a family, and all of a sudden the government comes and says, we need your daughters. We're going to see if they're fit for our king or not. That's not something that Americans would go for. Okay. Verse 4, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. All right. So what displeased the king about Vashti? Well, she wouldn't degrade herself. And at the drunken party, the drunken feast, and be subjected to just being the king's possession type of a thing, but Esther, as we're gonna see coming here, what they're gonna do is they're gonna groom somebody who will please the king in that way, who will fulfill all of his desires, who will let the people live, who will not challenge their behavior, and will let them do what thou wilt, if you would, to do what thou wilt, to live every man according to his own pleasure. And Esther's going to be that perfect candidate, which is today, really, it's the Zionist religion, okay? Part of the do what thou wilt. It's a corrupted version of Christianity, and so on. Verse 4, and let the maiden which pleaseth the queen be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So the king thought, hey, this is a good plan. Yeah, let's go get all the virgins, bring them in here, and we don't have to worry about Vashti anymore. Verse 5, now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite, okay? Now, a lot of people have worked this genealogy, and they align it with the Babylonian captivity that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. And they see that Mordecai would be like over 110 years old for this to fit historically. And all throughout this book, we're going to see that there are historical problems with it. In other words, it doesn't line up with history. It's not in Persian history. It's not in other places. Esther and Mordecai are never mentioned anywhere else in the Bible. Purim's not mentioned. Prayer is not mentioned. So we see there are a lot of problems here. And I believe that Mordecai is not actually of the tribe of Judah. He would be those whom Jesus said claimed to be Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. Okay. Fits perfect with me. If Mordecai is the named after the god Merodach, is a Babylonian god. We know all those pagan gods, they come from Cain. They come from the serpent seed. Then this fits like a glove. We have the serpent seed story dressed up as or disguised as the true children of God. So a certain Jew, and by the way, and I think Esther would have been 110 years old or more as well, if you align these supposed historical dates. And you know what? That's not going to be, she's not going to be much of a virgin to look upon at 110 years old, right? Esther chapter 2, verse 6, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. Now, this is where the dating comes into play. That if this were true, if Mordecai was taken away during this captivity, then he would be about 110 years old if this whole story takes place under this Persian king, Xerxes, who they believe is Ahasuerus, and so on and so forth goes the argument. Esther 2, verse 7, and he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, so they were cousins, for he had neither father nor mother, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. Took her for his own daughter. Interesting, Jacob, there we go, camera. So we see here what's really going on here, and this is going to play out as we read through the chapters, is that Mordecai was part of the deep state. He's part of this network, but he was also Esther's handler, okay? We hear of the programs back in the day that the CIA supposedly doesn't run anymore called MKUltra and things like that. Well, they would groom these honeypots. They literally had training and grooming for these honeypots. But they would get these honeypots oftentimes from broken homes or somebody's, their parents were on drugs, or these were homeless victims, homeless women that were, either could be kidnapped victims and or just children whose parents did not care about them whatsoever. And they end up in these networks, and then they ended up getting brainwashed through the MKUltra program, and they would train them and use these women as spy or agents to manipulate, control, gather information from powerful leaders around the world and or leaders of business, you name it. That's what this is. In fact, when you look at the book of Esther, it literally is, I believe, the template for the deep state's honeypot program. Okay. It's how they use these women to manipulate and control and ultimately gain world dominion. How can you say that, Pastor Ben? Well, how does that align biblically? Have you ever read about Mystery Babylon in Revelation chapter 17 and 18? You find out that she was the one who manipulated and controlled all the kings of the earth by sleeping with them, okay? It says that all of the kings of the earth were in bed with Mystery Babylon. That's how she could, that's how this control works. And that's why we are warned over and over again in the Bible. In fact, I'll actually go a little bit on this. When you look at paganism, this is really the root of paganism from the beginning. How in ancient Babylon, they had, as well as all these other pagan cultures, they would have these temple prostitutes, okay? And they were part of their whole system of gathering information, controlling people. How all this worked is they had these temple prostitutes. There would be your high-up prostitutes that would be used for, more powerful leaders. And then on and on the list goes to your lowest temple prostitute that would be used just to demoralize and degrade the family structure, and keep people reliant upon the state, keep people thinking according to carnal lusts, and on the list goes, right? It was all a system of state control to use these temple prostitutes. That's really what Esther is. She's the queen temple prostitute. The temple, what temple are we talking about? We're talking about the synagogue of Satan. Okay? That's the temple we're talking about here. Esther 2 verse 7, and he brought up Hadassah. Now Hadassah, I think we already read this verse, but Hadassah means queen or myrtle. And some might say, well, Pastor Ben, Daniel was given a pagan name. The three Hebrew children were given pagan names by the king of Babylon. So this is, no different with, you can't say that that these guys are pagan imposters dressed as people of the tribe of Judah because of their names. Well, we're not looking at this book, we're not classifying Esther and Mordecai. We're not coming to the conclusion that they are indeed Babylonian gods snuck into our Bible disguised as Jews merely based off of their names. We're doing this based off of everything they're doing in the book, okay? The fruit that's being produced by them today brings us to that grand conclusion, as well as you're going to see other types and overlays within their supposed story or myth interwoven into this book as well. But Hadassah also means, like I said, means queen. That supposedly was her Hebrew name, but it actually fits the theme of what we're talking about here. Hadassah, Esther being Ishtar, the queen of Babylon. Okay, the queen of Babylon. And I believe in the Ishtar Murdoch myth, they were actually relatives. Those two gods were actually related as well, according to many. Now, to sum this up, what we've been talking about thus far, deep state agents, this is a truth that we need to take home with us from these verses, deep state agents like Mordecai don't seek the throne, they seek to control the throne, okay? That, because kings and rulers rise and fall, right? Every generation, a king might only reign for a few years. Why seek to be the king if that's a volatile thing, right? You're answerable to the people might rise up against you. If you really want power, don't seek to be the king, seek to control all the kings. Be the power behind the throne. That's how you achieve generational power that you never lose. And that is ultimately the purpose of this book of Esther, to teach their people, to teach Mordecai's people, to teach the serpent seed how to retain power generation after generation. And it's not to be the outward king, it's to be the puppet masters. Which is interesting. Henry Kissinger has stated in various ways this statement here. Henry Kissinger, by the way, if you don't know who he is, a lot of people, younger people don't know who he was, including even people in my generation. He was kind of the power behind the thrones to many presidents, going all the way up to the Bushes, okay? all the way back to Nixon and before, he was always known as that guy that was behind the scenes shaping foreign policy. He was the Secretary of State for Nixon, and he was always kind of there, right? He says this. He would say this: real power comes from shaping policy invisibly. You get that? Real. So what does that make our kings and our rulers really, ultimately, when they are being controlled by the deep state, which all of them we know, most all of them have been, the ones that have resisted it. Many people believe John F. Kennedy resisted it at a certain point. We know what happened to him. But what are they all? If they're all, they're puppets, right? But they're play actors as well, right? It's like for them, it's they enjoy, how do they get people to volunteer in these roles, so to speak? Or how do you get people to want to take on this role when they know they're being controlled? Because they know they're being controlled. When they get into office, they know they're being controlled. That though they may resist it here and there, what keeps them there? Well, we talked about sex oftentimes. Bill Clinton went to Epstein Island like I don't know how many times. You know, he was caught by in the White House with somebody who claimed to be of Judah, and many people questioned whether she was doing him favors in the Oval Office. On the list goes, right? So what they want to find is candidates that are vain, right? Candidates that want the praise of men. They want everybody to love them. They want everybody to think they're great. This is really not very much different in Hollywood, okay? Hollywood's the same way, same with many of these successful pop singers, the deep state agents, the Mordecais, the deal signers, excuse me, the record labels, all that. They promote these types of people so they can do what? Well, if you want to be rich and famous and popular and beautiful and want everybody to love you, sing these lyrics, sing this song, okay? And play this act, which is interesting. It makes me think of Trump. We've been talking about him a little bit lately. He's obviously a candidate that is perceived as someone who thinks very highly of himself, right? He's his pride. He wants everybody to think he's great. He wants everybody to think he's awesome. He wants everybody to think he's achieving all these things. So there's a little bit of a vanity there, right? Versus principle. We all knew that Donald Trump was never the whole thing about him, right? It was never based off of principles. Because number one, he was a Democrat, and all of a sudden now he decided to run as a Republican. And so right away you see there, it's not principle that drives the man. What is it? It's achievements. It's greatness. It's all these things. It's maybe power. But what we saw him a couple weeks ago with that picture of himself dressed up as Jesus, okay? Which he said later was, no, it's a picture of me as a doctor. But recently, and a lot of people are talking about this all over social media, yesterday, today, there was a group of evangelical pastors and some Jewish rabbis. They gathered together at one of Trump's properties, one of his golf courses, and they're literally having this prayer service or whatever at the base of a golden statue of President Trump. I don't have a picture of it. You can find it online. I'm sorry, I didn't have enough time to include that. Everybody, you just go on any social media, everybody's talking about it, okay? President Trump, I listened to the audio. President Trump called them up while on some kind of a speakerphone while they were there celebrating the golden image of him and saying, oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, people are taking pictures of this all over. And he was just soaking it up. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, so the argument right now among many Christian conservatives is this. Well, I think Trump still might have a master plan, okay? He's going to take down the deep state. He's going to do this, this, and that, right? So we just got to roll with it. He's got some great economic plan or empire plan planned out over there in, with Iran and the war with Iran. There's some deeper strategy that the rest of us lower guys don't understand yet. So let's just trust the plan, keep supporting Trump, and everything's going to work out. I'll work out fine. The problem is when you dress your, when you show a picture of yourself as Jesus, that's blasphemy. And you have an idol of yourself on one of your properties, a statue, and you say it's so great, and you call in and you recognize, he recognizes, not like somebody just put it there and he said, what are you doing with that? That shouldn't do that. We're looking at blasphemy and idolatry, literally some of the top commandments in the Bible. It doesn't matter if Trump has a secret plan to take down the deep state. If you're committing blasphemy and idolatry on a mass scale, this it doesn't matter. Okay? Maybe he's trying something like that. But when you do these things, it absolutely does not matter. And it puts him in that category as a false messiah, a false savior, this, and that. Okay? It's beginning to be, and he's building arches and wanting to build ballrooms. I mean, come on, guys. How much further do we need to go before we say, no, you know what? And we say this at the beginning of every one of our studies. We are the resistance. We are the remnant of the woman's seed who strive to keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. You literally have evangelicals at the base of a statue of Trump celebrating and initiating it and doing whatever else they were doing with it. It totally reminds me of the Israelites right when they left Egypt. God delivered them from Egypt. What did they do? And Aaron was involved with this, the chief priest. What did he do? They made a golden calf and said, and what did Aaron say? These are the gods, or this golden calf, and these are the gods which delivered you from Egypt. The whole narrative that we're being presented today is that Trump is going to save us. He's got a master plan. It's part of Q. It's part of this. It's part of that. It's no different, my friends, than what the Israelites did in Egypt. Do you want to be part of the remnant seed, part of that loyal virgin bride of Christ? If you do, you need to take these things seriously. We can't keep brushing them off and saying, Trump's penthouse doesn't matter. That was in his old life. He doesn't view himself as Apollyon, the god of the sky that conquers all the forces of this world to gain power and glory or whatever else. We can't ignore that when all the pieces fit together and they keep saying the same thing. What we ought to be doing is saying, my gosh, we fell for it. We were duped. We thought maybe he had such this bad, unclean past, but maybe he was going to turn around and do something good for us. You know what? I kind of hoped that was the case. I hoped that President Trump was a Samson type figure, but a Samson did not commit blasphemy. Samson did not put an idol of himself. He was just a rough guy who was a sinner, who eventually, it was actually a child that was born under the vow of the Nazarite, because he didn't drink wine all of his life and all that and all that stuff. And then he ended up having this beautiful prayer at the end as he sacrificed himself for the benefit of his people. Anyways, sorry. We got to get rolling through some scriptures here. Didn't intend to go into that as much, but we have to because that's where we're at, you know. All right, moving on to our next section, verse 8, 666, purification ritual. And it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, And when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace, to the custody of Haggai, another deep state agent handler, kind of like your Epstein, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. Custody of Haggai. I mean, this makes me think of something. You know, when I was researching Epstein Island, I was thinking, you know, how they got, and you're going to see it play out here in a minute, how they got all of these, how they got all the women there was interesting. There are a lot of court documents and other documents that were released that suggest they were using modeling agencies, beauty pageants, and other pipelines, if you would, recruiting pipelines to find these women. So they probably say, hey, you really want a great career? You really want to, you know, be somebody special? And then they say, yeah, well, let's come to Epstein Island and we'll show you how. And then once these women would get there, guess what? Guess the terror that came across some of these women. Some of them, I'm sure, played the game, right? That they're just that kind of woman. They're an Esther, right? They're going to do this because they don't care about morality. They're going to do whatever it takes to feel like they're in control, right? These women, I mean, this was a perfect setting for this. There was only two ways in Epstein Island, on boat or via helicopter. You get to that island and there's no escaping. In fact, there was one lady that attempted to escape. She tried swimming out, I guess, and then they caught her and regathered her. And all these things, anything I'm mentioning here, these are from the documents, okay? This isn't just guessing. This isn't you'll find this as a recurrent theme. So these women would get there and they'd realize they're trapped. There's nowhere to go. And the other thing that made this island so powerfully successful for them to run this operation, this Zionist operation, which we know was Epstein, his wife. His wife's father had Mossad ties and all this. This was a honeypot operation. This was a place either to blackmail. This was a place either to blackmail politicians by getting them to commit acts that they don't want other people to know. And no doubt it was a place where they could find the right candidates to be used as people that could be like an MK Ultra person, a spy or whatnot. So it was this big recruiting. You gather all the beautiful people, right? All the people that have these motives, modeling agencies, beauty pageants, and start finding the ones, you know, there would be probably had their scouts and agents in these modeling agencies and say, you know what? I think that would be a good compliant victim on Epstein Island. I think, and every once in a while, there probably were a lot of compliant women that never complained about Epstein Island. This was great. But then they'd run into the few that ended up regretting it or whatever. And that's how Epstein Island finally got exposed, right? But there was no way out for these women. I mean, how scary could this have been? And there was one victim that said that Epstein enjoyed or got a rise out of seeing the fear in the girl's eyes. Okay. Talk about evil. Talk about evil. That he literally got off on seeing other people scared to death. All right. Verse 9. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens, which were meet to be given her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids, unto the best place of the house of the women. Okay. The most fancy place. Remember, they're for these women, they're also using the luxurious angle, feeling important, feeling special, when they were just going to be used to control the king. Verse 10, Esther had not yet, check this out, Esther had not yet showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. Okay? Don't let them know that you're a Jew, is what Mordecai says in today's terminology. But for the deeper student, we know that these are those who claim to be of Judah and are not. Esther and Mordecai were actually pagan gods. They're not Jews, right? Esther's not a Jew. She's a Babylonian god. Where did the Babylonian gods come from? Well, when you do a deep dive into history, you know that they were created by Cain and his descendants. Who was Cain? He was of the serpent seed. So I take this deeper and I say that Esther and Mordecai don't want you to know they are of the serpent seed. Okay? Hide that. That is their big game, right? They don't want to come out and say, tell the world, yeah, we're the serpent seed. We came from Cain, and we feel like we're the rightful rulers of this world. We feel like we're the true chosen people. And so on and so forth. They can't win like that, right? The serpent has to operate in the shadows. Once a serpent is very vulnerable, once it's out of the shadows and it's out into the open. And so the serpent seed has to disguise themselves as people they're not. And in this case, they disguise themselves as being of the tribe of Judah. All right. We know that some of these agents also, some of these leaders will marry women. And even in the protocols, they say they send these women, and they present them as Italian women because the Italians supposedly, I guess, look very similar to what someone would think someone of the tribe of Judah would look like. Okay. And, you know, the dark hair and so on and so forth. So they would masquerade as Italians to marry these powerful leaders when really it was a serpent seed wife that they ended up getting involved with. Verse 11, and Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Okay. Mordecai, again, being that type of that guy, that handler on Epstein Island, watching the women, watching how they're doing. Verse 12, now when every maid's turn was to come to go into the king Ahasuerus, after that she had been, now check this out, 12 months, according to the manner of women, for so were the days of their purification accomplished, to wit, 6 months, with oil of myrrh. 6 months with oil of myrrh. This is where she's bathing in, these oils, right? The anointing, if you would. The anointing process of the Esther candidate. And 6 months with sweet odors. That's the training where you train how to be very seductive to your victims, and with other things for the purifying of the women. I have no doubt in code here, in this parabolic story, this Jewish fable, serpent seed fable, not Jewish, it's fake Jewish fable, that the number 6 is chosen here for a reason, okay? It's chosen here because we know what the number of the beast is. The number of the Antichrist in the book of Revelation, it's 666, okay? And here we have a 6 months anointing process and a 6 month process where the woman is figuring out how to be very seductive with scents and all that kind of stuff, right? Symbolically speaking. Now, when you ask yourselves this question, and this is what we see all throughout the book of Esther, this seems like a gross exaggeration. I mean, you're going to spend a whole year prepping these girls? I mean, wouldn't a couple weeks be good enough to get these girls cleansed and ready to be presented before the king to be a part of his harem or whatever. That is one thing that pops out to many, and this is one mark of the fables back in the day, is they're all these Jewish fables were always interlaced with fabrications, okay, exaggerations, things that the common person would say, well, that just doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem like that would be what was done historically, okay? And it wasn't. So 6 months plus 6 months gives us that 666 preparation ritual. Then the grooming process, verse 13, Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went, and on the morrow, she returned unto the second house of women to the what? Custody of Shashgaz. These women were not free. They could not come and go, right? You go, you sleep with the king. He tries you out for a night. And now you go to the other holding chamber, the second house of women under the custody of Shashgaz. I would imagine that some of these women probably have felt a lot like the Epstein Island victims. I'm trapped. There's nowhere to go. And that's the whole point of this. This is literally the template of how they operate from generation to generation. And it's a very simple story, yet elaborate scheme. The king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines, she came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her and that she were called by name. So the king would try her out for a night. If he didn't like her, he would never call her back. She was still just stuck in wherever. Who knows what they did with her after that, what her daily life was like. You know, we don't know, right? Verse 15. Now, when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, he was the handler, properly interpreted, I would say, was come to go in unto the king. She required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So Esther had a really good coach, right? It was Mordecai. He taught her how to rise to the top. How to do all this. How did he know? Well, he was part of the deep state. He knew all the players, right? He knew that what would gain the favor of this guy, that guy, and ultimately the king. He knew everybody's motives. This is how they operate. They know you inside and out. And I would dare say this, Satan, if you want to apply this to your own life, Satan knows your strengths and weaknesses. He knows what tempts you and what pushes your buttons, what causes you to get off the path and so on and so forth, okay? This is just the art of the synagogue of Satan. You know how to manipulate people based off of their known lusts and desires and so on and so forth. So she knows exactly what to do, basically, because she was coached by Mordecai. Verse 16, so Esther was taken unto the king Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, in the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now, my friends, we have to look at the numerics here, because when you're writing, whether you're God and you're orchestrating events in the Bible, numbers mean something, right? There are spiritual significance to numbers. For instance, the 12 tribes of Israel, 12 is the number of governmental perfection. 10 is the number of law and order, and so on and so forth. There are recurring numeric themes all throughout the Bible. Well, this, when you add up this date here, you're in the 10th month, okay, and the 7th year of his reign. What is 10 plus 7? It is the number 17, okay? We know the number 17 to be the number of victory. And in the book of Revelation, the word overcome is used, the Greek word for overcome is used 17 times in that book. But here we have Esther as the overcomer, the inverted inversion of what overcoming is, right? This even goes further than this, guys. There's this Esther, Ishtar, and Venus connection right here with this date, okay? I'm going to read verse 17 and I'll talk about that. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in the sight more than all the virgins. Is that not true in our government today? Is not the Zionist religion, the Zionist ideology, is that not the thing that is celebrated on both sides of the aisle today? Of course it is. How do I know that? I just watched the State of the Union. When the president said something about supporting Israel, both sides, Democrat and Republican, stood up. Everything else Trump said up until that time, the Democrats sat down and the Republicans clapped. Okay? And the king loved Esther above all women, for she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, more than any other religion. You can talk against Islam, you can talk against Christianity, but if you talk against Zionism, you have committed hate speech, you're an anti-Semite, you're a dangerous person, you're a terrorist, and the right now tries to say you're a liberal because you don't follow the exact conservative platform, even though conservative platform's been hijacked. That's why it's called the neoconservative platform, new conservative, not traditional. Okay, so, all right, let me get back to this before I get sidetracked. The 10th month what was the 10th month? Well, interestingly, it was in the middle of winter. Now, I could go on and on. When you look at a lot of things, like a lot of the communists, when the communists took over various nations, a lot of that stuff happened in the winter. Now, why is winter significant? Well, we know in the Bible holidays are centered around what? The growing season, the season of light versus the season of darkness. Literally every single one of our feast days, Passover, Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles happens in the growing season, or the season that represents light, life, all those things. Whereas the winter season, from a biblical standpoint, always symbolizes death or darkness, because the days are shorter. Darkness takes over the daytime. We know here in the Northern Hemisphere, especially in Minnesota, in winter, darkness prevails. Okay, darkness prevails. It's always, so Esther is crowned in the darkness, so to speak. In the spiritual sense, when we look at things spiritually, and this is a theme all throughout the Bible, even from Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark, the dating of Noah's Ark stamped out the resurrection period, the growing season, and separated it from the floods of darkness and chaos and destruction. Well, you could say Esther was crowned during that chaos, darkness, destruction period. That there's two that the year symbolizes, okay? Now, take this even further, guys. Aside from this season being the symbolic of the spiritual period of darkness and mourning, the 10th of Tevet, okay, commemorates the beginning of the Babylonian siege of Jerusalem, okay? But it also has this. It is also the profound, it also has a profound connection with Ishtar, in that, according to Babylonian religion, mythology, Ishtar, the Babylonian queen, was crowned in this month. This was the month that she that she received all of her power. Well, how did they get that? Where did they get that from? Because Ishtar in paganism was symbolized by the planet Venus. Venus would begin to be bright and visible in December and January. The 10th month here is equivalent to our December and January, okay? In the deep of the winter, at your darkest, basically during your darkest point. We know that around December 22nd is the darkest day of the year, okay? And that appears to be the time when Esther was crowned queen. Now, I can't help but think about this. You know, you think of, you know, Christmas and stuff like that. I don't want to go deep into that. Santa Claus comes from the North Pole, from this place of darkness, and gives all these gifts. And it's like all this weird stuff going on there with the North Pole. Satan seeks the sides of the North. But also we know that Jesus was not born on December 25th. December 25th was always known as I'm trying to remember the name of the holiday. It was a pagan holiday, and it had to do with the winter solstice, okay? It was when the pagans celebrated the winter solstice, the time of darkness, whatever. It was the greatest, darkest day of the year. We know that based off of diligent research, we know that Jesus was born on the Feast of Tabernacles, okay? That was when the Word of God tabernacled with us in the flesh, okay? He would have been conceived by the Holy Spirit in the darkness, if you would, but not born. So there's a lot of stuff, weird stuff going on with Babylonian, Ishtar. They keep trying to point us to the worship of Ishtar in so many different ways. You think about Resurrection Day. Resurrection Day is literally called by Christians worldwide Easter. All you got to do is pick up a Webster's Dictionary, particularly an older one. The new ones probably say the same thing. And look up the word Easter, and it'll say Ishtar / Ishtar, the Babylonian sex goddess. Okay? And so, anyways, this is another piece of evidence to strongly support the idea that the Book of Esther is not only a Jewish fable, but a story. It is literally the myth of Ishtar and Babylon, Ishtar and Merodach, the Babylonian gods, woven into scripture and disguising these characters as the children of Judah. Wow. Verse 18. Then the king made a great feast, and they did this. There was something called an Ishtar feast in the month Tevet that the Babylonians celebrated. Again, I can't help but think of Trump's gate at this time. Many people that say it resembles the Ishtar gate. All these things are just come. It's like literally strange that all these things are coming together at once, where we almost have no excuse but to not see what's happening before our very eyes. Epstein Island, Ishtar gates, ballrooms, idols of yourself as a man, posting memes of yourself as Jesus. Wow. Verse 18, then the king made a great feast unto all the princes and his servants, even Esther's feast, and he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king. Interesting, we talk about Esther's feast. Donald Trump also just proclaimed a month-long celebration for Zionism, if you would, the other day, and he wrote a whole proclamation about it, and you can check that out too. Verse 19, and when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. You know, it's funny because I'm going back to Trump's proclamation. In that proclamation, you're going to see that he literally celebrates Zionism more than, or the people that adhere to Zionism, as the heroes of America's founding more so than the real story. The heroes of America's founding were those pilgrims that came across on the Mayflower for the express purpose of advancing the gospel of Jesus Christ in this new world, the new promised land. Yet Trump's proclamation makes it sound like we owe everything to the Zionists. The Zionists gave us America. Read it. Check it out. Okay, verse 19, and when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Of course, he sits in the king's gate because he's the chief political god of Babylon. He controls all everything that happens in Babylon, okay? Mystery Babylon. And he's the kingmaker. He decides if somebody's going to be king, somebody's going to not be king. How does he do that? Well, he's got that whole network of advisors surrounding the king. Verse 20. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. For, and this is common among the handlers, the women have to obey their handler. The worst thing you could do is disobey your handler if you're somebody in this condition. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, not the commandment of God. You know, which you'd think Esther, if she was a godly woman and she was one of the heroes of faith in Hebrews 11, which she's not, by the way. They never mention her. They happen to forget about her, I guess. She did the commandment of Mordecai. That's who she was loyal to, like as when she was brought up with him. All right. Yeah, sneak your, in order, you know, really, guys, if we really want to have, think about this. We kind of treat Trump the same way. We want America's greatness to come back. We don't want to be under the control of the globalists and all that. So we're thinking we're going to do this based off of Trump's ingenuity and his ability to play 12D chess. Okay. Is that not really what that's what the book of Esther teaches us to do? The book of Esther doesn't teach us to rely upon God. It teaches us to rely upon or trust in man's cunning devices in order to secure freedom for your people. And you're going to see this play out in this book. That's what this book is all about. No prayer to God, no following God's commandments. It's deception, trickery, manipulation, and all these things that gets Esther and Mordecai the victory. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. I have no doubt here this is supposedly an assassination plot. I have no doubt this is really what you would call today. If you were one of Mordecai's people, you'd say, create false flags so that you can, you know, get what you want out of that false flag, okay? And this is a false assassination attempt upon the king. Verse 22, and the thing was known to Mordecai and told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Okay, so supposedly Mordecai uncovered an assassination plot. He caught the guys and he took care of matters himself. He made sure that they were hung. Him and Esther made sure this happened. But the thing is, they never even told the king. We're going to see this is bizarre. This doesn't even make any sense. In the next chapter, the king's going to all of a sudden, I don't know if it's the next chapter or chapter after that, the king's all of a sudden going to find out that Mordecai did this great deed, but he didn't even know about it until way after the fact, which is strange. If there was an assassination plot on the king, anybody with any common sense would say the king would be notified immediately. So that only brings one conclusion in my mind, is that this is a false assassination attempt of the king used as a false flag to advance the Zionist agenda. Okay? To thicken the plot. All right. And by the way, he says, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Nowhere in Persian history are you ever going to see mention of Vashti, Esther, Mordecai, or any of these figures. They're just not in Persian history. In fact, we're going to find out, you know, so the king takes Esther as wife. We're going to find out that if you do some research in Persian history, they were very particular on who would become queen. In fact, they had these Persian royal families all kind of stayed together, and they married within that Persian family. So the idea that some random virgin hiding her identity, some Jewish orphan, is going to marry a Persian king in Persian history is not only it's completely fantastic. And that's why we go back to the Jewish fable. Fables are just that. They are fantastic stories meant to further some kind of an agenda. In this case, it's the agenda of the serpent seed to gain power and control of the world, so on and so forth. But in closing, I'm going to say this. Visible kings, the moral lesson, or the lesson that, it's not a moral lesson, it's a lesson that God wants us to know, I believe, is that visible kings come and go, but the hidden hand of the serpent seed remains. And if you study history, you'll see that there's a dynasty that has carried on from bloodline to bloodline to bloodline. And it's always the same family in control of the kingdoms of this world using these exact same methods, as well as others that we haven't gotten into, such as financial control and things like that. With that said, let's go to questions and comments.
Oh, man. There's just so much. As you've been talking about this, and we've talked kind of about this in the years past, and I don't know, there's always a little side of me that's kind of like, you know, battling inside and questioning things. And I mean, the more you talk about it, and the more I look into it, it's you're right on, and it's just fascinating. Just the Esther and Mordecai, and how that is the same as Ishtar and Murdoch, Marduk or whatever. I just did a little research again, quick, saying what does Mordecai mean, and it means, the first thing it came up was follower of Marduk, which Marduk was a Babylonian, whatever, false god, pagan god or whatever, right?
Right.
So right there, I mean, that right there, it's so funny because some of these things, and it seems to always play out this way, they're these hidden deep things that are evil and the deep state and all that, but yet if you have the eyes to see, ears to hear, they're right in your face.
Yeah.
It's like they're not hiding it.
No.
But yet they are, you know. It's just fascinating. So, yeah.
Well, even to add to what you're saying, even the Talmud, which I don't recommend reading for any spiritual value, even the Talmud, the rabbis in there say that that the book of Esther is fictional. They acknowledge that it's not true. And they even acknowledge that Esther and Mordecai are disguised versions or variations of Ishtar and Murdoch.
Yeah.
They literally admit it. And so it's not, like you're saying, it's a strong delusion of the truth is so obvious, but yet we don't want to accept it as truth because it's so hard to accept that this could be happening.
Yeah. I mean, even down to, you know, you were saying, talking about Trump building that arch and stuff, and my initial gut is like, well, yeah, that's what they do in governments. They have monuments, you know, and we have the Lincoln Memorial, we have the Washington Monument, and what's the big deal? Well, then when I was looking up Ishtar and Mordecai and Murdoch or whatever, and then here's the Ishtar thing. It's exactly like the arch that Trump wants to build. Ishtar. Yeah,
well, her. And the figure on top of it, they might say, well, it's a statue of Lady Liberty or whatever.
Yeah.
But now they added wings to her.
Yeah.
But also, anybody who's done any research or historical research on the Statue of Liberty, it was made by a Freemason, and they understand that it's actually, you know, it kind of looks like a dude dressed as a girl, too, if you look how muscular it is. It looks like a guy dressed as a girl, which that even, if that's what's going on before us, they're really throwing it in our right. face. Like, you guys are stupid, but the Statue of Liberty, no doubt, is the god Ishtar as well, the Queen of Babylon. And it wasn't put in there by our founding fathers. It was given as a gift to us from a French Freemason to represent liberty. So literally this idolatry started, this conversion of us into this Babylonian religion started in America long ago. So if you say, my point is, if you say, well, that's the Statue of Liberty or Lady Liberty on that arch, you're still literally looking at the Ishtar arch or the Ishtar gate, because the Statue of Liberty is Ishtar. I mean, it's crazy.
It's all about double meanings. You have the one meaning that's righteous and good, you know, the lamp way to freedom. But then you have the deeper meaning, which is what they want, you know, to be embedded, and that's what you're just explaining.
Right.
The other thing I was wondering is, I don't know, I haven't gotten through Esther all the way, or I didn't notice it, but do they talk about, or is it coming, what happened to Vashti, or does she just out of the picture at this point?
Yeah, she's completely removed from the picture. We don't hear anything.
So they don't say if she's no longer queen, or they don't say, because it seems to me that Esther doesn't really seem to become a queen. It seems like she just becomes a toy for the king to play with and to make Vashti jealous and hurt her.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't see where, as they got married and everything, and she was a queen. It's like, if she was a queen, why would she be in with his harem?
Well, she was being, so on that 10th day of the, in the month Tevet, that's when they placed the crown on her head.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. But then it seemed like didn't she go back to the harem or the whatever?
That's what's weird about it is that's another thing about this book that makes you think, well, it's not making much sense, because she later on in this book, she's going to like risk her life to save her people. And she does that by going in front of the king uninvited, right? That supposedly if you did that, it was either the king would extend to you grace or you're dead.
Right.
But isn't she the queen?
Yeah, she's the queen. Yeah, exactly.
There's holes in the book of Esther, like gaping holes. And I think this is hard, you know, but the problem is a lot of Christians read this book and they don't want to think that Satan could have snuck a book in here. And I believe he did. But God allowed it. God kept it there because there's a lesson for us in it. But the holes are so gaping that it's like we're almost without excuse to go along with this.
Yeah. We got some couple of comments here. Our Prevost says, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables.
That's from 2 Timothy 4:4.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the truth. Keith Olson says, does the deep state want us to believe Trump is the Antichrist because it's so in our faces? It's ridiculous.
You know what? I don't know. I mean, Trump could just be some stooge that they're playing with using his vanity.
That's what I think.
I think that's a very, very good possibility. But when you look at the Antichrist, it is interesting in that the dragon or the serpent gives him his power and authority. So one could look at that and say that this Antichrist is set up by the deep state or whatever to be the Antichrist or the tool they use to get Christians to deny Christ. And kind of happening to a certain degree already. A lot of Christians, have been following this MAGA movement, so they're so loyal to it that it doesn't matter what Trump does. And he even joked about in the beginning when he ran, he says, my followers are going to stick with me. And, you know, no matter what, I could shoot somebody in broad daylight and they're still following me. And I'm thinking, he's right. It's like there's a spell cast upon them. And then when you look into what MAGA means and magic and Satanism, we know he says it means make America great again, but there's always the dual meaning to paganism. And it also means the followers of the sun god.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
And I don't think he's smart enough to make that move, but someone in his ear early on probably said, hey, I got a great idea. Mega. Make America great. You know, and that person's part of the deep state somewhere, or, you know, led by Satan. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's how, I mean.
Because I just don't think Trump is, his fault is that his ego is so huge, and he wants to be, like you said, he wants to be honored, and it's all about his legacy, and that's why he wants all these ballrooms and these arches. To him, it's to show, everyone will say, oh, that's Trump. Trump did that. Trump is his legacy. But the deep state that is, you know, controlling him. And I think when he came in, he was anti-deep state, you know, and I think he probably was. And that's why so many people got on board, because he was the anti-government. He's the opposite of what it seems like he's becoming. Mm-hmm. Now he's being controlled. Now he's being handled. And the biggest evidence of that to me was the Epstein files. When he first got in, on the second term, I think, he just came right out. And he wouldn't have said this if he wasn't controlled, wasn't under control of the deep state yet, because he said, it's all going to be released. We're releasing the whole thing. Day one, he said. And then all of a sudden, magically, out of nowhere, it's like he never said that. He started backtracking. And it was, I remember him one time, he even said, are we still talking about the Epstein files? Because people are saying, hey, where are they? You promised us. And he was so adamant about it. I'm going to release this, going to expose the dirt. And what I think happened is that's all part of the deep state. And he didn't realize that at the time when he said he was going to release it. But then when he went to release it, whoever the deep state is, whatever the deep state is, said, no, this isn't going to happen. And this is why. And basically, I think that's kind of when the controls started a little bit more than I've ever seen. Anyway, I don't know.
Well, I guess there's two theories on that. One theory is he's played us all along.
Well, right?
He's just been an actor on a stage. And the other one, I kind of lean more towards you as a strong possibility, what you're saying, is I think in this narrative, I think this is a possibility that Trump wanted power. They weren't going to let him have power, the deep state. He knew that. So he thought, well, I'm going to then talk against the deep state. I'm going to do all this because I want power. You know, I want to be in charge of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, he was very successful at doing a lot of things. And then at some point, the deep state then said, okay, they gave in, they succeed. They figured, hey, maybe we can use this guy for our plan. And now they've harnessed his
ego, pride,
his ego and his pride. And they decided, well, we're going to use him, I guess. Whereas before, they didn't want him. They wanted Hillary Clinton. It was obvious they wanted Hillary, like during that time. They thought... Yeah.
That they would just fall in line. That'd be a lot easier.
I forgot to bring this up when you're talking about Esther type characters. Maybe I'll save it for another time, but I'll just bring it up really quick now. Beauty pageants was one of the pipelines. And a lot of people are wondering, they see a lot of weird stuff going on with Erica Kirk, and they're asking, was...
Over her year-long sabbatical where she went and did nothing but read the Bible... For a whole year.
Was it?
All of a sudden she became Miss Holier Than Thou, whereas you see her before and she's saying really inappropriate things on her little videos to get on to all these, you know, the Amazing Race and these, like, what are those?
Reality shows.
Okay, not at all. And I get it. Like, we all go through a phase and we die to ourselves and become a Christian. But to go from that to every word that comes out of her mouth is a Bible verse, and she took a whole year, reminded me of this 12 months of
preparation. Yeah.
like very similar, this honeypot, whatever you're, but they're doing it in the guise of Christianity now.
Right.
To get these very beautiful women to do what? Control. And we all know that Charlie was on his way to probably the next top spot.
Well, here's the obvious narrative. Charlie Kirk was coming out against Zionism, which he previously supported. He did a 180 on it. He dies. He gets murdered. His wife then takes over as the CEO of the company and makes sure that it stays supporting Israel, that it continues to support Israel and stuff like that. So anybody with any wisdom, or if you were a detective or something, you'd say there's definitely something that's not adding up here.
Not just supporting them. I mean, even guys that Charlie liked, now she's coming out against those people. Like the guy who resigned from that army guy who resigned from...
Joe Kent. Yeah. Joe Kent, yeah.
And he previously loved him, and now her people are all speaking out against Joe Kent.
Right.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff going on there that it's hard to understand.
Well, I mean, you look at the honeypot things. I mean, this is a very real thing. I mean, they make movies about this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's
real.
Secret agent woman being used to manipulate people. This is not like I'm coming up with some kind of fantastical theory it's documented in history. People make movies about it. This happens.
It is hard for me to believe that Charlie Kirk was duped by her into that, but maybe that's exactly what happened.
Man, when he met her, I mean, she was Miss Arizona, and
yeah, I mean, he was deeply in love with her.
If she's trained in the perfumes and the arts, in the seduction, if she's trained in this, you know, when you watch her, did you see her hugging Vance at the memorial service or whatever?
Mm-mm.
She literally is like got her hand up in the back of his hair. That's like,
I didn't see that.
That's not like a friendly girl hug.
No,
that's a seductive type move to like somehow you know, just
usurp power over him.
Yeah, like literally some kind of a lustful act. I mean, I don't go around hugging girls and having girls put rub their hands up in the back of my head. If they did do that, I'd be like, whoa, what's going on here?
That's the touch of a woman that you're married to, not the touch of a woman that is just, you know, a friend.
Exactly. But I guess my point is maybe it's just so automatic. Maybe she's been trained where it's so automatic that when you confront men all the time, you do it in such a way as to break down their barriers with some kind of a lustful touch.
Yeah, and then I totally believe that. It's funny because a lot of people are coming out against Candace Owens because she's really on board with this whole Erica Kirk's in on it. And there's a part of me that's like, geez, Candace, she does say some crazy stuff, but I don't know, the more... I always try to lean on the side of, you know, what I see, and I don't know, and the more that I hear things, what we're talking about, you know, about even with Charlie Kirk's wife, I'm starting to think that there's some truth to it. I don't know. I'd hate being that conspiracy theory guy. That's the problem. But
I've thought that a little bit too. I'm like, well, maybe she's hurting herself by just dwelling on this topic because, you know, it's like she hasn't really, Joshua, could you? Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Like maybe just pick another topic, you know, because people are going to think you're just obsessed with this, right?
Right.
But the other side of me says, you know what? If she does uncover the truth of this topic, if this happened, if there was a conspiracy surrounding this, this connects with everything else that's going on in America and the world. Like it exposes if you can expose that one thing, now this whole thing starts. The light starts getting shined in every dark corner around our country.
It almost feels like the Holy Spirit has been on her because why did she, I mean, a year ago, she uncovered and did that whole book series on chaos and MK Ultra and all that. So we've all like seen that unfold. And so we now know like, oh my gosh, this stuff does happen. Whereas before I was like, oh, whatever, they're just making stuff. stuff up. But when she goes through and documents all of that, and then this grand thing happens, like, the very next couple months after she's already uncovered all of that, it's like, I don't know, man.
I don't either.
I listen to all her stuff, and she documents. It's not like she's crazy.
Yeah.
You only listen to a snippet, you're going to think she's crazy, but she's not the only one. There's several other people that are uncovering all the same stuff, and it's just the mainstream media is trying to cover them up and make it sound like they're crazy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what would happen if you were onto the truth. They would start calling you crazy, because that's what they have to do. Yeah, it is. It's insane. The more I hear about these things, and the more I'm starting to be a believer.
Well, I just want to add to what you said there. I've totally forgot that she was on these other topics of the MK Ultra.
Talking about Candace Owens.
Owens. She was talking about way before anything happened with Charlie Kirk.
Yep.
So I do see the Holy Spirit work that way in my own life. And so where he prepares you, like, you've been studying this topic, and then all of a sudden something happens and you're like, oh my gosh.
It lines right up.
I wouldn't have really understood this had I not just been studying this, this, and that. And so she was, it seemed like she could have been perfectly primed to be the person to investigate the unanswered questions, if you would.
Yep. Our people says Trump said for decades that he had no interest in being president until he did. I guess the time was right. He told Christians they wouldn't have to vote ever again, whatever that meant. And then he says they worship Tammuz as a symbol of life and growth, and made idiots of trees and in the winter. Sorry, I'm having a hard time reading today. Do you know who Tammuz is?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he's bringing up a verse from the Old Testament. I'm trying to remember what book that was from. Ezekiel, Isaiah, one of those, it was in Ezekiel. They were weeping for Tammuz in the church, in the actual temple. They were worshiping false gods in the temple. But I think he was connecting that to, it sounded like he was connecting that to the winter season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Babylonian. It makes perfect sense. If you're the inversion of the truth, if you're the inversion of the light, you try to make darkness light and light darkness. And we're, like I said, all of our holidays, that God's holidays, are all during the growing season or the season of light, whereas Satan's are in the season. It appears as though, especially the one that we talked about today, Esther's feast, and her crowning happens in the season of darkness.
Yeah, that's fascinating. He says, the new Colossus poem, look into that, written to raise funds for the Statue of Liberty. And they put up Harris, the most ridiculous choice ever, that you had to vote for the other one, you know, the best, better of two evils, I guess, you know, Trump and Harris.
Right.
Although, I mean, I still say Trump has done a lot of good for our country. If you take away all the stuff we're talking about, I mean, he's done a lot of really good things that I am grateful for, you know. One is locking up our borders and getting rid of illegals. That's a huge one.
But now I hear that he wants to grant amnesty now to large groups of illegals. So
there have been some rumblings about that.
Yeah, yeah, so it's...
That's pretty bad, if that's what happens.
Right.
Jay Nunn says, Donald Trump, Melania, entire Trump family, elite gender inversion. They are everywhere, in every sector of society. Yeah, and one thing I say about that, though, that's also interesting is, and maybe this leads to the whole bigger picture, but... for some reason, all his kids seem to be good people. You never hear of them getting into scandals or trouble, or, you know, whereas normally a rich, kind of powerful family like that, the kids somewhere along the line, you know, you hear this happens, or they get into drugs, or they get caught involved, you know, whatever. But you never hear anything bad about the Trump kids.
Right.
And that was always a strong point to me, that, well, he must have been a pretty good father, because, you know, raised decent kids, and they're well-spoken, and they're, you know, you don't hear them. You don't hear bad things about them, but that could be all part of the cover-up.
Yeah, I mean, it could just be that, you know, like, even in the dark circles, right? Like the serpent seed circles. I don't think Trump's a serpent seed. They, you know, they're doing bad things, but they do take the time to train their next generation to continue their legacy, you know, generation to generation. And Trump seems to be that kind of guy where he wants his name to live on through his children.
Oh, no doubt.
And maybe that's why his kids are not, you know, drug addicts or whatever. They seem to be productive citizens, right? Whether you agree with everything they're doing or not, they're not Hunter Biden's.
Yeah, right, they're exactly. Not Hunter Biden's. And when you hear them speak on interviews, they speak well-spoken, you know, they have sense of humor. They're surprisingly somewhat down to earth, you know, and at least the way they speak. But we got one more here that Jay Nunn says, research Candace Owens, her husband, children, and father-in-law. I don't know what that means. If that means there's a deeper side to her, or if there's does that mean that's a good side to her? I don't know. I haven't researched her father-in-law or her husband at all.
Yeah. I mean, so at the end of the day, you know, it's like same thing with the Book of Esther. There's this, you know, when you, there's all kinds of what ifs about a lot of people. Some people say Tucker, since his dad was involved in the CIA, he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what you got to do is just test the fruit. That's the surest way. Is what they're saying accurate and helpful, or is what they're saying misleading and hurtful? That's really at the end of the day. So we don't know who's, if we judge everybody by association, I mean. Yeah.
Or are they trying to prop up themselves or give credit to the Heavenly Father? Like,
yeah.
Are they constantly trying to, like, move people to the kingdom and, you know.
Yeah, that's a good measure.
Saying that, like, well, you know, I'm just a humble servant. I'm,
that's what Charlie Kirk, you know, was like. Right? He was always giving God the glory.
And then there's this, like, Nick Fuentes, right?
Yeah.
When you watch the guy, you're like, okay, he says a lot of stuff. He exposes Zionism, and a lot of young people can get behind him and say, this is great. But then there are other moments where he says stuff that's just like, it's the opposite of how a Christian would speak, right?
Does he claim to be a Christian?
I think he does. Okay. I think he claims to be Catholic, I believe. And then he's always attacking the people that are standing up for the, you know, good people, like, well, he's attacking Candace Owens, right, for trying to uncover stuff. And he always seems to, on the most important issues, he'll say all the stuff about Zionism, but when it comes to the most important issues, like asking questions about the Charlie Kirk, he always takes the opposite side. So I wanted to go a little deeper on, when you test the fruit, also look at patterns and what these people say and do at certain critical times. So, like, you know, he's always one thing that he did right away after he got interviewed by Tucker is he started slamming Tucker as some odd, weirdball CIA guy. And I'm like, Tucker just had a nice interview with you. He was very gentle with you. Didn't, you know, wasn't a hardball interview and stuff like that. And he goes and does this. And so what you constantly see with Nick Fuentes is he's always creating division among forces that are truly fighting against Zionism. Is he doing that because he's paid off to do it? Is he doing it because he's a knucklehead? I don't know, but he's definitely not the kind of guy that I ever want to be associated with, even though some of the things he says are right on the money.
Right.
And sometimes he says them in such a funny way that you wish other people would say it like that.
Yep.
But it's the other percent that they use him as, if you believe a lot of stuff we believe, the enemy, like the Mark Levins, the little Mordecais, will start saying, You're just like Nick Fuentes. And then show a clip of Nick Fuentes saying something absolutely ridiculous, making him look like a neo-Nazi or something like that. So test the fruit. Test the fruit. That's the surest way.
That's it. Other than that, happy Mother's Day.
Yes. Here we go. All right. We want to thank everybody for joining us. Be sure to go to our X. Follow us on X for our daily discussions, daily posts, so you can be a part of that discussion. But until next time, stay in His Word every single day so that you can be a Christian overcomer. God bless.
Great sign burning in the sky, woman crying, crowned with light. Dragon waiting at her feet, teeth like night, heart for a spy. Child is carried to a throne, war breaks out above this world. Earth opens like a shield.